Welcome to the luncheon panel for the 2014 See How Convention. I am Leah, grateful, recovering, compulsive eater in the See How Fellowship. Welcome, everybody.
Hi.
Hi. We have some fantastic speakers for you here today. We will be starting with each one of them having a 15-minute pitch and a question and answer period afterward. And we will be starting with Jan from Arizona. Take it away, Jan.
Thank you, Leah.
I will time you.
Okay. Can I pass Leah? Pass that around. Can you do that? Hi, everyone. My name is Jan D. From Kingman, Arizona.
Hi, Jan.
Hello to you all. This is so wonderful to be here today, to see all the recovery in these rooms and just be part of it. I was blessed to be part of the World Service Business Conference also for the previous 2 days, and that was really a growth time for me. I've done it before, and every time I do it, it's more growth. Little bits at a time, but that's the way it is. Our theme for the convention is A Road to Happy Destiny. And for me, that really struck the journey that I've been on. I've been in this program for 10 years and 20 and 16 days, and abstinent that whole time through the grace of God only. I am a full service sponsor. I have done service at all levels. And that is what keeps me on this road to the direction that I'm going. I grew up in Pennsylvania, in the wonderful steel town, Pittsburgh. And as I was thinking about what I wanted to share today, I thought, well, I was born there. So let's kind of just briefly start there on this amazing journey. And I kind of think about the trip across the United States to get to Arizona, where my life changed when I found See How. I looked at diets all my life, and none of them worked, especially some out there that talked about this deity that I wasn't about to accept into my life. And so I just avoided those, and nothing else worked. I was always traveling as much as I could. After a very traumatic adolescence, I had trauma in my life when I was 9, when my mother passed away. My life up until then had been just a glorious childhood that I am now able to remember. And I... the turmoil of the next 10 years when my dad remarried through no fault of anybody's, it just happened. And I didn't make it any easier, although I always blamed, you know, the infamous stepmother. I'm sorry. I ended up loving her dearly. She became one of my best friends. And I'm so grateful for that. And it wasn't until that I realized what an impact she made in my life that I was able to start really recovering and really forgiving and dealing with my own defects. I made life really difficult for her because I was going to do it my way, and which still tries to crop up every so often, but, you know, God's in charge and all is well, and I have this wonderful fellowship and program, and it really, really keeps me in the right direction on this journey. I was always, I always said I thrived on change, and I never worked at any one job longer than 3 years. And I had a profession that I could do that. I could change jobs, you know, a year, 2 years, 3 years, but never more than three, because I thrived on change. No, I was running. And didn't realize how much I was running, and didn't know until I started in this program and in my recovery, especially my spiritual recovery, I didn't know that I was running from myself. We moved out to Arizona 15 years ago, and after about 3 years, I decided, hey, I'm close enough to Las Vegas. I'm going to commute. I want to work there. I want something more exciting because this little town of Kingman is just, it's a little town. But so I went to Las Vegas, got myself a little efficiency apartment, and my husband kept my our home in Kingman. And it was the worst year of my life, I think. I was working as a home health nurse. I was a supervisor. I had all this responsibility, and I was supposed to have weekends off to be able to go home. I ended up being on call 3 weeks out of four, night and day, and I did three things during that year. I worked, I slept a little bit, and the rest of the time I ate. I came home from Las Vegas heavier than I had ever been in my life, and that photo that I'm passing around was a month after I left Las Vegas and came back home. And I got to witness my daughter's second marriage, and there I was. Totally ballooned out at 220. It was about a year after that I found my recovery. I tried another diet, started losing weight more than I had ever lost on any diet, and took that first bite off of that diet, and that was my last first bite because I binged for 8 months. And then God guided me to someone who was doing this program, and she became my first sponsor. That was July. I went to the first meeting July 8th, 2004, and found my abstinence on July 10th. So I just had it my 10-year anniversary, and what a joy. You know, it's the old ego wants to step in. But I can't let it, because I have to put that aside and give God the credit. The spiritual, the physical recovery is pretty obvious, I think, for many of us, although I've developed illnesses that would be 10 times worse if I were still 220. And it's like these are gifts, just like desperation was a gift. These are gifts because they're teaching me to cling even closer to my fellowship, my abstinence, and my God, my higher power, who I do call God. And it's what it is for each of us. But back to this journey, I was thinking about driving out here over the weekend. And, I start out in one direction. I get prepared. Just about drove myself crazy getting prepared because I had to stop right after I left and do some writing and some prayer and meditation because I drove myself crazy packing and trying to be prepared for anything. And I'm like, why am I not? This fear took over. And I'm thinking, why have I not just trusted that my higher power is in the driver's seat? I'm not. He'll provide anything. I just went through that again at the grocery store because I had brought a certain amount of stuff with me. And, I mean, we're provided all these wonderful abstinent meals, and I'm worried about not having enough. And I'm like, okay. God's in charge, not me, and I have to trust. I have to really, really trust. And on this road, if anybody's ever been to Pennsylvania, we have a wonderful, our swimming pools are actually potholes in the middle of the road. And, so I feel like I'm on the construction crew of my road to happy destiny. I have to fill the potholes, because I hit them all the time. And once in a while, they do more damage than others. But thank God I've been able to find a way to fill them in, smooth them over, whether it be with writing, with any of my seven tools, I can start filling those potholes along this journey, along this road. And we have something in Pittsburgh. If anybody's actually lived in Pittsburgh may know this. They're called City Steps. And what they are, Pittsburgh is very, very hilly. We have probably more bridges in Pittsburgh than in any other city, I think. But sometimes one road is down here, and 200 feet up, there's the next road. And there's really no convenient way for a pedestrian to get up there, so they build all these steps. And these are my steps. You know, when I'm walking on this road, when I was down here before I started program, I knew that I had to get up there, and that would, for me, would be my happy destiny. So I have to go up these steps one step at a time, and that's when I started doing my steps. I just took them one at a time, and it took me quite a while to get up there because I'd get winded. I had to do my inventory at least two times before I could move on to my other steps. And once I got through my 12 steps, it was time to do my inventory again. When I got to maintenance, it was so marvelous because I was able to go over and review and reaffirm everything I had committed up to that point. And I'm one of these slow travelers, but that's okay because we each go in our own time. It took me a long time to learn what true honesty was. And it wasn't just not stealing from my mother. It wasn't just stealing food out of the freezer. It was looking at myself, being able to surrender. And it wasn't until I was able to totally surrender my will and my life to my higher power that I was able to really, really find recovery. And it wasn't till then that I was able to even stand in front of someone and say, this is my higher power and he's at work in my life. I truly am blessed. I don't think I'll ever get to that. I'll never get to that final destination. It's a continuous journey. And I used to think, well, you know, if I'm abstinent now and if I get a terminal diagnosis, I'm going to just start eating everything. And I'm like, I don't think so. Today, I cannot do it. I have to be abstinent. My life depends on it. Even if I'm looking at a finite point where my life is going to end and I happen to be aware of that, okay, my higher power is waiting for me. And if I don't go in abstinent, I'm not going to make it. And like I said, this has been a wonderful journey. It's still going on. Every once in a while, I encounter my family of origin along the way. They're living in these little oases along the road. And I've learned to just pass them by oftentimes. They really don't understand, and so I just take it easy and just go by, and I wave and say a few pleasantries and go on my way and still head to this happy destiny. I really don't. How am I doing on time?
You have 1 minute 50 seconds.
Okay, great. No, I mean, I still have 1 minute and 50 seconds. Yeah. And again, you know, I really am so grateful to be here. There's so many people that I already know here, and it's a joy to meet many of you for the first time. Voices that I know from phone meetings, people that I hear in outreach. People that I've called and said, oh, this is Jan. And they're like, oh, okay. And just a little word about outreach calls. I think so many of us feel like we're bothering somebody. please bother me. Please, I never know when someone needs to hear a friendly voice. And there are times that I've gotten that friendly voice along the way that I needed that and didn't even realize that I needed it. It put me in a whole new frame of mind. And there's times when I have to make a call. And depending on, you know, sometimes it's that random call. I don't know who I'm calling. I'm just calling because I have to. And that's part of my wonderful journey. And I'm just so grateful that that I can be here today. I thank you all.
Jan, I'd now like to introduce from Washington, D.C., is that right?
That's correct.
Miss Carlisa.
Well, hi, everybody. Is that okay on the volume?
We got it.
Okay. I always like to start with gratitudes. First, I'm grateful for each of you. Without you, I cannot recover. I cannot continue to recover. At my top weight, I weighed 365 pounds. That's 1 pound for every day of the year. I don't weigh 365 today, and that's because of you all and my higher power. That's just what's up. That's just what's up. The second thing I want to be grateful for today is the freedom, the absolute unmitigated freedom from alcohol and sugar. I ate sugar and drank alcohol for 30 years of my life, every single day. But when I came into these rooms on April 4th of 2009, that stopped. And that's a miracle. And I want to just be grateful for these things because it's the little things that after 5 years I start to take for granted. Sugar was my higher power. Anger was my higher power. Resentment was my higher power. Other people's opinions of me was my higher power. Judgment was my higher power. Frustration was my higher power. I had a lot of higher powers. Now I have one, and I choose to call that one God. So I'm grateful for a renewed relationship with the God of my understanding, which today is not white substance of any kind. I'm grateful because I have a program of recovery. I'm grateful that I have tools. I'm grateful that I have steps. I'm grateful that I have traditions. I'm most grateful to know that all of my problem today starts in my head, every bit of it. My problem is negative thinking. I mean, I love our program because we get taken to a house cleaning in our step four process, but some of us stay there. And I would be one of those candidates who just stays there going over and over and over and over my story, because I glory in my story. Oh, didn't you all know that I was a product of a dysfunctional household? Well, if you had met me 5.5 years ago, you would have known that. And didn't you know that my father was an undiagnosed paranoid schizophrenic? I know the people on the phone bridge got tired of hearing that. I mean, that shit went on for 2 years. Come on. At some point, I had to say, hello, are you glorying in your story? And the answer was, yeah. Yes. My father's dead. My mother's dead. And I'm the only one carrying it, digging it up each day, and trotting it out so that the first thing people see after they see the 365 pounds, that is a story. So I had to learn to let go of that story. And in these rooms, one day at a time, I do that. And the story has a lot of chapters and permutations I get to see. So a part of that story is, oh, poor me. And I had to admit about 2 weeks ago that self-pity is one of my closest and dearest friends. Does anybody know what I'm talking about? Okay. I am like, oh my God. I mean, I really didn't even know it. So I'm grateful for the awareness today I really am grateful for the awareness that self-pity is one of my dearest and closest friends. But like the victim story, it is just a permutation of that. It's just a permutation of the same old story. Please pay attention to me because I need it. You know, so today I get to release that. So let me tell you how I get to release it. I work with a very skilled coach and therapist, and I also have a wonderful sponsor, and I have all of you. So we get taught that faith without works is dead. Yes, we believe, but we must do more than believe. We must work. So what was really revealed to me recently that the work starts and ends in the head, so that I need to align my will with the will of God in program talk. So how I do that, instead of saying, I really want to be a writer, is I am writing best-selling novels now. Okay? Or I really want a husband. I got a good man and he loves me. Or if you want a woman, I got a good woman and she loves me. So you start talking in the present tense. It's that simple. It's living as if. We've heard that principle over and over and over again in these rooms. So that, for example, if I want a different relationship with other people, then I practice, I am compassionate, I am humble, I am loving now. I extend to others the same love, compassion, and humility that I would like. And just start living it now as if. And then when my old friend self-pity comes and says, why don't you come back to us and live in the cave? I can say, no, I am no longer a cave dweller. I live free, joyous, and happy out in the real world. So to some, this might sound like, she's just saying words. Well, words have power. You know, what we've told ourselves, we're too fat, we're too old, we have too much cellulite, we don't have enough cellulite, we're too black, we're too white, we're too something. You know, have you ever noticed that we're only too much for our own lives? I'm really not for letting another minute pass by where I do not feel the connection with my higher power in this present moment. Because this is the only moment I have. So if I'm trying to resurrect the dead, which I've done for so many years, or trying to look forward to the future and control that, anybody know what I'm talking about with the control thing, the manipulation thing? It's all out of fear. Today, if I believe, I have nothing to fear. Who knew that I would ever be able to be free of sugar? That right there is proof that there is a consciousness higher than mine operating. I have more faith to get on a plane and fly 5 hours here than to believe that in the next second, my higher power will provide for me. Isn't that crazy? You know, I flick on that light switch, as the big book says, and I just know the light is going to illuminate, but I don't want to take the next step because I'm not sure. Or when I hit the send button on my computer and the spinner comes on, the little blue circle, and it sends, I know it's going to get there. It might take a while. But why don't I have that same faith? Because I got to get my mind right. So I'm going to say, if you don't hear anything else about what I've said today, how do you need to get your head right? Because that's where the real change starts and ends. That's the real alignment. Aligning my little mind with the big mind, the universal consciousness that somehow guided us all into this space together, like a river, where we could all settle and listen to each other like wonderful, wonderful currents and bodies of energy. Isn't that amazing? You know, you had more faith maybe in getting in your car today than the faith to believe that whatever brought you this far will take you further. If I only believe. What do you have faith in today? Do you have faith in that sugar? That man? Or do you have faith that whatever brought you here means well for you? That the universe is a friendly place an energetically positive place that will rise up and support you in a little eddy in this room. You know, that's that. I'm just wondering, what are we believing in? Where is our head today? Do you have your head right? Well, so it takes a lot of work, believe me, but the work is minuscule to the benefits. And I know there are many of you in here who know that already, and I'm glad to be among you, because only with you all am I able to progress. I'm at 10 minutes, I don't have anything else to add, but stay in faith, believe, and know that I'll meet you on the road of happiness today.
Thank you so much, Carlisa. I would like to introduce Kevin from Los Angeles, California.
Hello? Do we have photos we pass around? Is that what we do? All right. My name's Kevin, and I'm a grateful compulsive eater. And I... For reasons that I will explain, I like standing up when I talk rather than sitting down, so I'm standing up. And just to get this out of the way so I can at least semi-enjoy myself, as a kid I grew up stuttering, and I stuttered really badly. And one of the worst things that a stutterer can do is speak to a group and be the only one that is speaking and everybody's staring at you. So. I have to get that out of the way so that I'm not trying to cover up stuttering, because I was very shameful about it. And there was a day that I spoke to somebody and I told him, I said, you know, I get very spiritual and then I stutter and it like takes me back down, right down. And he said something to me that changed my life, and I always like to share this because it really touched me. He said, you know, maybe stuttering's normal for you. And I went, yeah, that's normal for me. Yeah, I'm just normal. And from time to time, I stutter. And guess what happened? I just don't do it as much. But if I'm trying to cover it up, then I do it. And so I needed to get that out of the way right in the beginning. I got sober, you know, and after about 2 years, guess what I turned to when I put down the drugs and the alcohol was I turned back to food, you know, because I was always into food. But then the moment as a teenager when I found drugs and alcohol was like, come on, the alcohol was where it was at for me. So when I came into the program, I found myself I found myself gaining weight. My sponsor said, hey, you know, pal, your ass is getting kind of big. And I said, yeah, I know, Sponce. He goes, well, you know that there, you know, the 12 steps have worked so well for you. He said, you know that there's a 12-step program for food. And I said, really? He said, yeah, it's called OA How. Those were the days when it was OA How. So that was 20-some-odd years ago. And I walked into a Wednesday night meeting at the YMCA on Tahunga in North Hollywood. And I was just struck abstinent. I fell in love with how, you know, I was a 27-year-old bachelor, and, you know, you talked about weighing food, and, you know, I'm, you know, a 20-year-old bachelor. I knew nothing about tablespoons and teaspoons, but they did tell me, and I tell this story all the time, but they did tell me that, you know, that you can have 4 ounces of protein. And I was like, wow, 4 ounces of protein, that's a lot of protein at every meal. Because I was thinking of 4 ounces of cocaine. And that was a lot of cocaine. And I'm thinking like, wow, 4 ounces, okay. So I remember, you know, getting that food scale and, you know, putting a big hunk of protein on there, and I went, whoa, that's kind of weird. And then it was like, 4 ounces, that's all? And that's what began my relationship with God. Was looking at those 4 ounces on that scale thinking, you've got to be kidding me. Do they really know? I mean, I'm like, you know, I work out and I'm 20-something. I mean, really, is mine still 4 ounces too? They said, yes. Yours is still around, this too. But I loved abstinence. You know, I'd go to Gelson's and I'd get the expensive food and cook it in sautés on the stove. I just loved how. I loved it. It really worked for me. I lost a lot of weight. In the beverage program, they introduced me to the 12 steps. But in how, you made them an operating system in me. You put them in my OS. And it really, I was able to practically use them. I was able to look at the 12 steps because I was, you know, barely surviving on 4 ounces of protein. But I could look at the 12 steps and I could understand them. I love the title of this. It's, you know, our thing is called A Road to Happy Destiny. See, there were just two stutters in there that you didn't know, but A Road to Happy Destiny. And the logo for it, I saw on the shirts and stuff, is this little road going through, and then there's step one, step two, step three, step four, step five, and all the way, you know, the 12 steps. And I like to remind myself about those 12 steps that, you know, the first three steps are like triage. They're like, all right, he's dying, he's on the table, you know, clear, stop the bleeding. So we get in, we admit we're powerless, you know, they tell us that there's a God, okay, and then they say, turn your life over to the care of God. So, okay, so we sustain, okay, so the body gets sustained like in a triage, in an emergency room. So then they move you upstairs and they say, sir, I'm sorry, but we are going to have to do surgery. So we need to work steps 4 through 9 on you. Really? 4 through 9? I have to do that 4-step? No, please. What an order. I can't go through with it. So, yes, sir, I'm sorry, but we do have to do this surgery. So we go in and we do 4 through 9. We dig up stuff. We talk with other humans about things. I mean, how many times have we told other humans things we swore we would never tell anybody? And I see a lot of heads moving, and I'd like to talk to you after the meeting, actually. But yes, I mean, there were things I told my sponsor that I knew I would never tell anybody. What a beautiful, beautiful thing we have here. Steps 4 through 9, that surgery, we dig stuff out. Then we even go to people that we, you know, have something with, and we make an amends to them. So we're clearing up the past. We're clearing all the stuff out of our body and out of our minds that keep us in bondage. All that stuff that keeps us from hearing the message of our higher power. You know, there's a higher self that's on board, that's built in here. But with all that chatter going on, I call it the attic brain. With that attic brain chatter going on, we just can't hear the word. We can't hear. So 4 through 9, we get in there, we dig the stuff out, you know, we're on this road, it's kind of painful, you know, we kind of make a bigger deal out of it than maybe we should to our friends in program. Oh, I'm doing my 4th and 5th step now. Whew, it's bad. Yeah, it's going good though. I'll be okay. We make our amends, you know, we tell all these like gruesome stories about amends, and I had to go and do this with somebody and apologize and write a letter. And then we clear all that out, and then we go into the recovery of 10, 11, and 12. Ah, 10, 11, and 12, groovy. So now I've dug out all that stuff, but now when something else comes in during a day, I could review my day and go, you know what, that didn't feel too good, so I'm going to call that person back right now or tomorrow and tell them really what I meant by that. I didn't really mean how it came off. I can't tell you the freedom that I have been given with that statement when I would call somebody and say, you know, I was reviewing my day. And I just have to tell you that I really, it came off like I said X, Y, and Z, but I really meant A, B, and C. So I just really want to clarify that. The freedom of working a 10th step is magnificent, you know? We get to do that here. We get to clean out all that stuff, and then we get to just daily make sure we're staying clean. And it might be even like 2 weeks later, like we go, you know, I've been, you know, 2 weeks ago when we talked, I said this, and I really didn't mean it that way. It's such a nice thing to do. And I love that phrase. You know, I was reviewing my day and I need to talk to you about something. I mean, I do it with the people I sponsor. You know, I'll say something really stupid on the phone, and then I'll get off the phone and go, that was really stupid what you said. And the next day I'll say, you know, I need to tell you that I was reviewing our conversation. I might even call them back and go, I was just reviewing our conversation, and there was something I said that I really didn't mean. So it's a wonderful process that keeps us from, you know, building up so we don't have to go back into surgery. You know, and then the giving back on this road, the giving back of this program is the foundation for how we keep it. I mean, if you want to know what you have in your life, look at what you're giving away. You know, we give away what we have. And that's what they were talking about in our big book, is that, you know, we have to give it away to keep it. And you know, how do we give things away? You know, we give things away with just showing up to a meeting as being of service, right? Because if we all didn't show up, there wouldn't be a meeting. So just showing up to a meeting is service. Don't try to pull that one off on your sponsor, because it probably won't work too well. But it truly is. Making outreach calls. So many people think that, you know, oh, I have to make these, you know, outreach calls, you know, but, you know, I'm feeling okay. I mean, I don't really need to make outreach calls today. And think about that maybe the whole reason that you were given the gift of abstinence that day was because a person that was on your call list was going to be suffering that day, and they needed to hear from you. You know, it's not all about you anymore. When we get this program, when we get struck abstinent, you know, our job is to be there for somebody else. Our job is to ask. You know, the number one thing that I think people, I know, okay, the number one thing that I didn't do for a long time was ask. I would say, okay, God, here's what I'd like. I'd like this, this, and this, and this. So you just tell me how to do it, and I want that, God. And what I realized was that worked, you know, that was like, you know, playing red and black. You know, it worked part of the time, didn't work part of the time. So that was always kind of frustrating for me. And so what I came to realize was the way that this program for me works is that I clear out all that static. I clear out all that, the talk, the chatter, the attic static, the disease, we call it in 12-step rooms, the ego. And so we clear away that disease talk, that addict talking to us, so it quiets down just a little bit, so then I can go to my higher self, to my higher power, whatever you call it, and go, I need some direction here. What would you like me to do? Who would you like me to talk to? What would you like me to say? Allow me to be your servant today. Allow me the honor to do what you would like me to do today. And some days that might mean parking in the back parking spot, you know? We don't always have to pray for close ones, you know? We go to the gym and then we pray for a close parking space. We spend an hour on the treadmill and then go, but I'd like a close parking space at the mall, you know? Someday, park in the very back one and pass up a couple and say to yourself, somebody's praying for a close spot that I'll leave open for them. It's kind of a fun thing to do. It pissed off my children as they were growing up. They'd be like, Dad, you just passed up a parking space. You'll understand someday. Well, they still don't, but. So the program, you know, talks about one day at a time. You know, sometimes I have to boil that down to one morning at a time. Sometimes I have to boil that down to 1 hour at a time. And most of the time I have to boil it down to one moment at a time, moment to moment. Moment to moment, moment to moment. And that's like the good news and the bad news, you know, because the good news is that when it's not going well, it's a moment to moment thing. So the next moment it could be going well. The good news that when I'm feeling good, you know, it is moment to moment, that it might go in that next moment too. What happened for me was expectations really screw me up. So what happens is I'll go through the happy road and do those 12 steps. And then I'll think, well, my life isn't right. I'm still, you know, what's this going on? I must not have done it right. So let me go back in and do it again. And I did it again. And then it was like, I still don't feel like it's right. And so the addict brain goes, yep, got you right where I want you, right there. Always doubting yourself. Always that little bit of self-doubt. Always that little bit of self-doubt. That little bit of self-doubt has held me back from so many things in my life. That it's almost that the self-doubt is more of the problem than anything that I'm doubting about it. That if I were just to do it, instead of self-doubting it, I would be better off than spending all this time self-doubting it. So today what I'm focusing on in my life is self-doubt. That I really look at that and go, that's my addict brain, that's my ego, that's the disease talking. Time's up? Time's up. Okay. So I just want to thank everybody here. I want to thank Leah for asking me, Maria, Christina. I want to thank all the delegates that spent the past few days here hashing things out and doing things for us. We really appreciate all the hard work because I know that it's hard work. I want to thank all the convention people that put this on, that are the chairs and the co-chairs and the people that are going to be doing it next year. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you, Leah. Thank you.
Great. Is this okay? We have about 15 minutes for Q&A. If you raise your hand, I will bring the microphone to you. And just, I need you guys to write your first and last name on the recording disclaimer form when you talk. Who would like to ask a question of our lovely panelists?
My name is Kevin. I like long walks on the beach. Oh.
Thanks, Kevin. That was great. Thanks, Kevin. That was great.
Thank you, the three of you, for speaking and sharing your recovery with us. I'm curious because I spend a lot of time self-doubting. So could you elaborate on that for us a little bit?
Well, I really don't feel comfortable elaborating on that. No, that's my self-doubt. That was humorous. We can have fun in this HAL program, you know. We do eat clean, so we can have fun. Self-doubt. Well, I think probably everybody on here could write a paper on self-doubt. And it's just exactly what the addict brain wants me to think. Always self-doubting. I mean, it generally is always self-doubting. But when I get past that addict brain and ask my higher self, I can hear the message clear when I don't have that self-doubt. So that's from me. But someone else?
Jan, you want to take a stab?
I definitely want to.
Yeah. After I left the first workshop this morning, you know, I was feeling, oh, this is really great. And I started thinking, I have to speak after lunch. Oh, and these wonderful people who are going to share with me, I'm no good, you know. I just am not going to be able to do that. And then I had to let go and let God. I had to leave it to my higher power. I wrote a few notes and because I'm not, I was a teacher, so I got to kind of work my way through crowds, but to be able to say what I need to say, I can't make that decision, so I just leave it to my higher power, and he always takes care of any self-doubt that I have. Thank you.
In these rooms, I've heard courage is doing it afraid. Courage is doing it afraid. So I have come to really know that self-doubt is the last stand for me. And that is why it's so good to have a really wonderful set of tools, which we get, and spiritual tools especially, which say when that feeling of, oh, I can't do it, I'm not deserving, who do I think I am? You know, all that stuff,
I was going to say another word that begins with S. Stuff comes up, I get to say, I'm the beloved daughter of the Most High. That's who I am. And each of you, whatever your beliefs are, you're the, and so that gets to replace that feeling of self-doubt. I think that another tool that I use is just really, I mean, it is static. It really is static. It's just, you can't, I can't hear anything else because I'm so, and it's like, okay, I need a channel cleared here. So I'm developing this persona with the help of these rooms that say, okay, chatter away, but I get to make a decision. So if we keep walking the steps, if we keep applying the traditions to our lives and using our tools, we get a set of a spiritual toolkit to apply, to do surgery on our own selves. Just cut that stuff off, just like that. You know, it's just, sometimes it means stop, halt, leave it. You know, stop processing it. How many times are you gonna process it? How many times we gotta hear it? You know, I know it's like hard to imagine letting it go because it's a part of our identities. But aren't you ready for the next best thing? Aren't you? Aren't you?
I just want to add just one other thing because I really, this is a playground that I'm in constantly, is this self-doubt playground. That just to be the observer, man, that like knocks out like 95% of it. Just to not, because it's sort of like sometimes those cartoons that where the character kind of is, you know, smelling something very sweet and it's just kind of carried away. Self-doubt kind of does that to me sometimes, that I really am believing it, that I really believe it. And so if I could just for just even a moment, go, wow, look at all that self-doubt I'm having. It forms a crack, just one little crack where then there's a part of me that goes, yep, Kev, that's self-doubt. And I go, oh, that's self-doubt. Well, I know what to do about self-doubt. I don't know what to do about what I'm self-doubting, but I do know what to do about self-doubt, is that I ask that higher self, what should I do now? I need some help. I need help. The best prayer to ever pray is, I need help, God. I don't know what to do. We have somebody that has their hand up there.
My name's Dolores and compulsive eater. This question is for Kevin. You said it three times. What's a higher self? You asked your higher self something three times, first in your share, then in your comment, and then twice in that, once in a second comment. So that was three times you asked your higher self.
Okay, but there was one other time, too, that I did it. So I think there was four times exactly.
Okay, so what's a higher self?
But we could play the recording back because there might have been a fifth one. No, I'm just... you know, it says in our steps, it says, you know, came to believe in a power of our understanding, you know, so it's all our understanding.
But greater than ourselves.
Right, right. Well, higher is usually a little higher. I believe that there's a chip inside of me that's a God chip, you know, to speak in a computer term. Okay, the power, my higher power is within me. It's part of who I am as well. And it kind of comes out of me. I use the word higher self, God, intuitive voice, God, higher power. To me, they're all the same. There's absolutely zero difference between any of those terms that I just said. Exactly. You just said it in four words. See, it takes me about 25 words to say something like that. Yes, you're exactly right. Higher self and higher power, for me, are the same. fact, that's it. There's only those two things. There's only higher power and my attic brain.
I'm Sue, compulsive eater. So when I'm at a convention like this, I get overwhelmed by everyone's gratitude, and that's what I heard from all of you is, you know, the power of how this has transformed your lives. And what I feel is the seriousness of what we've been given and how we can, as you were saying, give this away. And how we can give it away in the way that we were so lucky, for those of us who've got some recovery and time, that we can give it away in the way that it was given to us. And we do have a program that we chose that is extremely rigorous. And there are some serious requirements. And, you know, I wish for everyone the kind of recovery that we were given so that we can pass that on in exactly the same way as it was given to us. And I just wondered how seriously you take that.
I'd like to address that as far as when I was given the gift of this program, I learned early on that part of my one of the traditions, you know, is that the only thing that's required is to be to want to stop eating compulsively, and I knew that I did, and I was given that gift. And then one of our steps is to pass it on. You know, this is a requirement. And once I started passing it on, it came back to me tenfold. And this was so important for me that to take this gift that I've been given and to pass it on and to help others, because I learned so much from, especially my sponsees. I learned from my loving sponsor. I've had several sponsors, and my current sponsor is such a gift to me in my whole, all areas of my life. And I get to pass on what I'm getting from her. And it just is this wonderful, wonderful chain of wonderful cycle. So, and then I'll pass. Thank you.
Hi. That's a really good question, Sue. Very good. And it's, for me, it's twofold. I take myself way too seriously, number one. So that's a bigger problem than most anything else. The seriousness of our disease, or of any of these 12-step diseases, is, you know, very serious. I mean, it's a life and death kind of thing. So, yes, there is that. So it's one of those, you know, one more, you know, of those 12-step big book things that they say it's this way, but then they said it's also this way. It's kind of like I do take myself way too seriously, and yet I am dealing with a very serious disease that is in me that I have to deal with, or, you know, I'm going to end up somewhere where I don't want to end up. I also like for the seriousness to come from within, like touching a hot stove, instead of me telling somebody or, you know, saying something to somebody in program, instead of saying, well, this is a very serious part. It's almost like you say, you know what, that's a good idea you're saying. Why don't you try it and call me in the morning? And they kind of figure out for themselves, like, that's a friggin' hot stove. I don't want to touch that anymore. And it helps somebody even, you know, feel it even more, be able to respond to it. But, yes, I do believe we have a serious disease, and I also believe we take ourselves way too seriously.
I'm so sorry, but this is going to be our last formal question, so Hi, I'm Jackie F., California compulsive eater. Not that there's any difference from California or Alaskan compulsive eater, but it's just the way it came out. I am a mom, a full-time working mom, and I'm mostly on the bridge. I just want some practical advice. I'm literally fighting for my abstinence. Like, what practical advice can you give when you have a full-time job, three kids, husband, you have this life? I mean, I'm listening to all this wisdom, and I'm not judging the wisdom that's coming, but it's like floating so high up here, and I'm like on the ground, like doing it, you know, get up, lunches. How do you speak to me? Because sometimes I think we're just talking to people who maybe who are retired or... who are, or I don't know. I don't want to get, don't throw rotten tomatoes at me. So I give the question over to you now because I want to be abstinent. I want recovery. I'm having trouble.
Good question. I'm not a mom, but if you want.
Well, Jackie, I'm retired. But I did start program working full-time, but my children were adult children by that time. And so I really don't have anything concrete except to advise you to seek out other working moms who are abstinent. Create your own little fellowship in that respect. I do get sponsees who are working, and I see how much they struggle, and I think, could I have done that? But when I see what the end result of what I have in abstinence and being able to do this program, I know that somehow I would have needed to find a way, and just doing our tools every day, and you know, fitting them in. And, you know, what I have seen is working moms who, their children are learning their life of recovery. And somehow it seems to make it a little bit easier because the children aren't, they're seeing what mom's way of life does for them, it becomes real, and life just might get a little easier that way. I don't know, but like I said, it's a matter of just sticking with, you know, work with other working moms.
Do you want to respond?
Go.
Okay. That's an awesome question to ask because it is very true. You know. People with their schedules that are, you know, lined up with stuff, moms that are, you know, it is very, very challenging. So it's very challenging. You're right. It is. And it is easier for somebody that has more time. But, you know, I was a photographer for years and, you know, I would have to work 12 hours and not have a break. That was just how it worked. You know, at a wedding, there's just no breaks for me. So I had to practice and I had to figure out for me what self-care was. So I came up with some things for myself and ran them by some of my confidants that kept me in self-care during certain times like that. So yeah, you know, realize that, you know, that this is going to be a little bit more challenging for you. And I think that's great advice to find some other moms. I mean, I know that Leah there is a mom and she's got all kinds of things and full-time work and all that stuff, and it's a real common thing. So, but you can be abstinent. You can do it.
Yeah.
And may I just add this, please? It is, I want to take a step back and say we all have incredible stressors, marriage, children, aging parents, physical dis-ease and disorders, different levels of disability. We all have stressors. When I came into fellowship, my mother was dying, and I'm an oldest daughter, so I had that. I have a full-time legal practice. where working 12 hours a day was absolutely necessary if I want, or so I thought. So we do, I understand about stressors. I do not want you to use your abstinence or lack of it as another way for you to beat up on yourself. It's real, and your recovery can be real, but it may be that some of the stressors have to clear through first. And I know people do not want to hear that, okay? That some of the stressors, because, for example, until I made a commitment to use every tool, I was out in the world doing God only knows what, all right? But I was so desperate when I came into these rooms. I was so desperate until I didn't have anything else to do but be here. So I don't want you to use this to beat yourself up. That would be my first. And I think getting other friends and pals in program is helpful.
Thank you all so much for your... Thank you all so much for what you've shared. Thank you to everyone who spoke. Thanks all for being here. And this draws the official panel to a close. Please stay and share afterward if you'd like.
Good job.
Yay, good job. Good job.